This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hello, this is Lana, and I extend a very warm welcome to you. Joining me is Kent Clisby, who has many stories to tell as a former CIA operations officer. We'll focus on his book, Willing Accomplices, How KGB Covert Influence Agents Created Political Correctness and Destroyed America. Kent will discuss how KGB covert influence agents in American education and academia, Hollywood, and the media inserted the anti-American messages that became political correctness. Now, I know all of you sincere truth seekers are not suckers for this political correct garbage, but unfortunately, many useful idiots have fallen victim to the false promises of the PC progressives' creed. Don't go anywhere because we'll be discussing many subtopics that fit under the category of the PC progressive agenda. Kent, welcome and thanks for being here.
Great to be here today, Lana. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we dive into the world of KGB and political correctness, please tell us about your background and how that led up to writing Willing Accomplices.
Well, I sort of have an eclectic background, but what really gives me the expertise and the ability to look at this issue the way I did was my experience in the intelligence community. I started out as a translator in the military. I was a linguist. I was a Vietnamese linguist. And that was back in the 80s during the Cold War. And that was the first time I ever really thought about the Russians or communism at all. I sat in the Philippines and listened to the Vietnamese communists who, the Russians at the time, had a base in our old Cameron Bay. So that was my first exposure to communism and that sort of thing. But I only looked at it at a very superficial level at the time. I was interested in counting Russian aircraft taking off from Vietnam it wasn't at the idealistic or philosophical level. But that was my first introduction to that kind of thing. Later on, after I got out of the military, I got into teaching English as a second language, and I traveled around the world, taught in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. And that is the other part of my background, which really comes together in Willing Accomplices. The two pieces of Willing Accomplices are the looking at things from the intelligence perspective, and the other is understanding American culture. And it's really important that Americans understand that our culture is unique in the world, mm-hmm. and that it's special, and it's the best culture, everything combined, that's ever existed in the history of the world. And I learned that by living and working in other places around the world. So I later came back to the States and worked for the CIA. I was a case officer, an espionage officer, and the job that I did as a case officer was to spot, assess, and recruit foreigners to provide intelligence to the United States. So that was my introduction to human intelligence and all of the different specialties within HUMINT, as we call it. One of those specialties within HUMINT is an area called covert influence. Mm-hmm. And I learned about covert influence. I practiced it. I studied it. I saw how it was done by our side. And I saw how our adversaries practiced it. That was while I was in. I didn't really get into any deep studies of the history of these kind of things while I was still in the agency. When I got out, it hit me when I was as a father raising my children. I've got two sons. They're 18 and 23 now. And as I raised my kids, one, the how American culture had totally changed from the time I was a kid really struck me. Yeah, it's, you know, just within the course of 20 years, as my kids were going through school, I saw things through their eyes, and I saw how much the culture had changed. So this was probably the early 2000s, say 1999 to 2000, as my kids were growing up. I was out of the government. I was running, I was an entrepreneur. I had my own business as a headhunter. 9/11 came, and I went back into the government as a contractor, working for the CIA, running counterterrorism operations. I traveled most of the time. I was out of the country about 6 or 8 months out of the year, but I was in and out pretty often. Every couple months I'd come back. And it really struck me at that time, as I would be overseas working with foreigners against our joint counterterrorism targets. And many of these foreigners are Muslims. Many of them are Arabs or Asians or other ethnicities, but they all really admired America, and they loved the idea of America. And yet, when I would return back to Dulles Airport, right outside D.C., get a Washington Post on the cab ride back home, and the headlines were as if they struck me as if a Russian, a communist who hated our country, wrote the headline. This was during the Bush administration. The media was constantly attacking normal Americans. They were attacking everything that Bush did, as we're in the middle of a war against terrorists. And it the more that I traveled in and out of the country and saw this dichotomy between what we were doing overseas to help others and work together, and how America was admired by foreigners, and yet there was a huge faction within our country that despised normal Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So, with all of these things came together, my espionage background, my understanding of covert influence, my immersion in sort of a cultural critique of American culture, all came together as I formulated the question of how could our country commit cultural suicide? Because in effect, that's what we were doing. We've done it.
It's done.
I posit now that in you see the subtitle of Willing Accomplices is how the covert influence operations destroyed, that's past tense, destroyed America. So that's sort of a long answer to your question, but there's a lot of facets that all came together to give me a unique opportunity to begin the project, the research project that resulted in writing Willing Accomplices.
Now, in your research, where would you say political correctness has its origin point? I know a lot of people talk about the Frankfurt School, which is a big X that marks a spot in history, but what do you say?
Well, that's an interesting point of view, and that comes up because that's what's obvious to people. People are looking at what is on the surface. A quick answer is the Frankfurt School and others like them, Alinsky, Saul Alinsky, and others who are obvious and overt, are all the descendants of the original creator of the message that is political correctness, and that is Willy Munzenberg.
Mm-hmm.
He was a German communist who was he was a member of the Comintern, a close friend of Vladimir Lenin, and it was his operation that he's really a genius. I mean, an evil genius, but a genius of covert influence operations. He conceived of the payload, the message that was inserted into our culture by his agents, and that became political correctness. So the key is to first define what is political correctness, and that's a big problem with Americans and conservatives. Many conservatives, many normal Americans, everybody knows or talks about political correctness, but very few people understand exactly what it is. And one of my goals now that I've done this research and this project, is to help everyone to understand exactly what political correctness is. When you define what it is, I like to start off with what it is not. And that is many of the misconceptions that conservatives and normal Americans have. When they talk about political correctness, they will say things like, PC is not wanting to offend anyone, or PC is the being careful of others' feelings, something like that. Well, that's totally wrong. Political correctness has nothing to do with not wanting to offend anyone. What it has to do with is a hatred of normal America and normal American culture. That's all. If you boil it down to what political correctness is, it's a hatred of American culture. And here's what, straight out of the mouth of Willie Munsenberg, who created political correctness. PC is, it's pretty much two sentences. America is a racist, sexist, homophobic, foreigner-hating, imperialist, capitalist hellhole. That's the first sentence. And the second is, and it must be changed.
Well, those are the progressives' talking points today.
Willie Munsenberg created that, and when you say that's the progressives' talking points, that is political correctness. They are not, I don't call them progressives. I call them politically correct progressives. Because progressivism, when you say progressive, that has sort of a positive spin to it. But if you call them PC progressives, then that exactly defines who they are. And as I said in the beginning, when we started talking about PC, terminology is really, really important. We've got to understand who our opponents are. We cannot counteract them unless we understand who they are. And right now, normal Americans are totally confused about who our opponents are and what they believe.
Yeah, it's interesting. Willie Munsenberg, he was also a co-founder of the Frankfurt School, and he stated flatly, he said, "We will make the West so corrupt it stinks." He goes on to say that they'll use intellectuals to make this happen. And as we clearly look at school today, they are using this to happen, and the West does stink, and it seems like it's all manufactured by these very people in order to make the West look bad.
Well, that's exactly what it was. And Munsenberg. What the two sentences I just described were from Munsenberg. That was his, in covert influence operations, we call that the payload. And his payload is the message that he inserted into our culture. Frankfurt School is they're sort of the losers of the operational world. They couldn't operate like Munsenberg did. Covertly. Munsenberg's situation was unique, and it was fantastic from a espionage operational point of view. His overt role was as a propagandist. Propaganda is very different from covert influence. He was he ran the Comintern, which is the Communist International, which was what the Bolsheviks set up in order to facilitate the spread of communism across the world, which they thought was going to happen in the matter of a couple years after they won in Russia. Munsenberg was in charge of the public spreading of the communist message. The guys in what they call the Frankfurt School are just a bunch of intellectuals who heard Munsenberg's message, who received the message and tried to do it overtly. That's the message that they spread overtly is not palatable. People hate it when they hear it, when it's overt, so they reject it. So the Frankfurt School were losers. Munzenberg's operations that created PC were the winners, and they were unbelievably successful. The way he did that, the way that he ran the covert influence operation, was to create front organizations. He called them the Popular Front. And none of them were overtly anti-American or anti-capitalist or anything overt. They all sounded great. And you see the PC progressives today continue exactly doing the Munzenberg operation.
For instance, Willie, he founded the International Congress Against Fascism and War, which is hilarious. And that makes me think of Antifa, who also claimed to be against fascism, but they're extremely violent fascist ones.
Well, that's a great example. But he and his operators set up literally hundreds of these front organizations. Each one of them would be controlled, sponsored, funded by the Comintern, by Munzenberg and his operators, and they proliferated all around the United States, and they pulled in what Munzenberg called them innocents. They're Americans who are drawn to this message of high-minded idealism, but yet then. Underneath that, the cover message of high-minded anti-fascism is his covert influence message. America is horrible. America is racist. The reason we need to do this is because America is supporting these German fascists or whatever the organization focused on. He created organizations based on racism, women's rights, imperialism, anti-imperialism, anti-capitalism, anti-business. Those were all Munzenberg fronts, Munzenberg's operations. None of them were overtly pro-communist or pro-Soviet. They were all overtly nice-sounding names. For example, have you ever heard of Sacco and Vanzetti?
No.
Sacco and Vanzetti was Munzenberg's first operation in the United States. It was in the mid-1920s. They were a pair of Italian anarchists who, during a robbery, shot and killed a cop in Boston. And they were caught. They were put on trial, and they were condemned. During their appeals, Munzenberg took up their case, and it was his first covert influence operations in the United States. He created several front organizations, mostly based out of New York City, and he targeted the entertainment industry and journalists and academics. And so he created things like Broadway for Sacco and Vanzetti, Journalists Against Racism, Journalists Against Xenophobia, Journalists in Support of Foreign Residents, something like that. So he spun this story of two anarchists who'd murdered a cop into America is a racist, xenophobic, foreigner-hating country, and if you join these groups to support Sacco and Vanzetti, you are a caring, sharing, beautiful, kind-hearted person, as opposed to all those racist haters out there in the rest of the country. Those normal Americans, they're all racist haters. Does that sound familiar?
Sure, yeah, of course.
That's exactly what they do today.
Mm-hmm.
And Munzenberg created that. If you look up Sacco and Vanzetti, PC progressives still foam at the mouth talking about Sacco and Vanzetti. They love it. But nobody realizes that that was a Muenzenberg operation, and that was his first operation in the United States. He saw how successful he was in sucking in these, what he called innocents, and I call them willing accomplices. They were all aware of that what they were doing was against normal America, but it made them feel good. He created this attitude of we're superior, we're better.
Moral superiority.
It's not just moral, but it is moral, intellectual, emotional, international. You're just a better person because you've joined this group and you have these high-minded ideals. That was Muenzenberg's creation, and it is exactly what politically correct progressives are still doing to this day. So that's where that came from. It didn't come from the Frankfurt School or a bunch of bloviating intellectuals who are overtly talking about communism, socialism.
But they really influenced the universities and started programming all the people in America, though, that's for sure, when they made their way over to New York.
Muenzenberg was way ahead of them. Muenzenberg had, in Willing Accomplices, you'll see, I did three case studies, one in the media, one in academia / education, and one in Hollywood. Those are the three areas that Muenzenberg targeted.
Sure, yeah.
I call them the transmission belts of culture. If you can insert the anti-American message into those transmission belts of culture, Muenzenberg's thinking was if you can get in there and control that the culture, then you can create the anti-normal American point of view that he was trying to create.
Oh yeah, it's a culture war. If you can control the culture, and you can control everything, including government. So of course, media, education, entertainment. It was a brilliant plan.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He was a genius. He was an evil genius. But that was Muenzenberg's plan. Wasn't the Frankfurt School? Those guys were just guys. They were hangers on to the overt Comintern propaganda sort of network. Muenzenberg was in Columbia University long before they ever got there. What I'm saying about the case studies in my book, Willing Accomplices, is for academia and education, I look at a professor in Columbia by the name of George S. Count.
Mm-hmm.
And George S. Counts was a professor at the International Institute for Education of Columbia Teachers College. He was recruited into the Muenzenberg operation right away. As soon as he arrived in Columbia, he was the Russian expert for the International Institute of Education. And as soon as he went to Russia, he was recruited. And from then on, that was in about 1925 or so. From then on until World War II, he was spreading the Muenzenberg message covertly, not overtly. What you find is that the people who overtly talk about these things, like the Frankfurt School people, were not effective. Americans would, if you overtly talked about this message of hate, you were rejected. But like the Counts, George S. Counts, his message was covert, and it was the way that Muenzenberg's operation worked, is instead of talking about how bad America is, you cloak your criticisms very gently into talking about a better way of life. You don't talk about socialism, you don't talk about communism, you just talk about a better way of doing things. Individualism, maybe that's not the right way. Maybe we should look at cooperating. And that was Counts. Counts, even till today, is revered in schools of education. They call his philosophy the Reconstructionist education philosophy. And it's the counts philosophy is where every American school teacher today always talks about their goal is to change the world, is to change America. That's counts. That came directly from counts, who was a Munzenberg covert influence operator. Counts' first book was a translation of the Russians' first five-year plan for their elementary schools. He presented it in a very non-threatening way and said, look, you know, here's an experiment that others are trying. What a great idea this is. And it was all about central planning, the elimination of individual effort, the creation of community-wide efforts, taking away the individual initiative, taking away individual, in effect, the rugged individualism that was America. What Counts pushed was he never called it socialism, but in effect, it was socialism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference between the covert influence, which was highly successful. It worked. He gained, and again, Munzenberg's, the way that he ran his operations was he made people who bought into his ideas feel like they were superior. And Counts was exactly this, that's how Counts worked. Counts, he ended up being the president of the Progressive Education Association. He was also the president of the one other teachers union, American Teachers Union. I can't remember the name of it. Let's say it starts with an A, American AFT, I think, American Federation of Teachers. But he pushed this covertly, the idea that we must do away with individualism, we must do away with the old American ways. We're in a new world, everything must be changed.
And also, whites are evil, they're evil colonialists, demonizing Europe, all of that started happening there. Very anti-white messages and rewriting history books, basically.
That's from Munzenberg. Racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, foreigner-hating, imperialist, capitalist. So each one of his operations would have a piece of that message. All put together, they all melded and were passed down through Hollywood. He had a huge operation in Hollywood. He had one case officer who ran specifically the operation to set up fronts in Hollywood. His name was Otto Katz. He went by Andre Simone, was one of his aliases when he worked against Hollywood. Katz / Simone set up several front organizations in Hollywood, and they also they got the media. The case study that I used to show how Munzenberg worked against the media is Walter Duranty, who was the New York Times man in Moscow.
He was also the Stalin's apologist, right? Try to cover up the Ukrainian famine, things like that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And that's the official bio. I mean, his biographer called him Stalin's apologist, but that's not. He wasn't just Stalin's apologist. He was a covert influence agent working in Munzenberg's anti-American operation. So it's. Before Willing Accomplices, people didn't understand, the general public didn't understand the depth and the breadth of the covert, people don't understand covert influence operations to begin with, but people could see, yeah, Walter Duranty is Stalin's apologist, but it's much worse than that, and it's much deeper and more sinister and more damaging than anything that people had ever realized before Willing Accomplices.
Yeah, they took a conspiracy to a whole other level. Disinfo, false flags, I mean, mind games up the wazoo.
In fact, I'm glad you mentioned conspiracy because I, 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 I deal with that in Willing Accomplices. You know, people will say, oh, yeah, this is a conspiracy theory. Well, espionage is a conspiracy.
Exactly.
By very definition.
Sure.
It's a group of people gathering together in secret to plan an operation to carry out an objective that they don't tell anybody about.
Exactly.
So that's the point that the reason that my background, my expertise as a espionage operator, as a conspirator, if you will, everything, all of the operations that I cannot talk about that I did as a CIA officer were all conspiracy.
Of course. Yeah.
Nobody knows who's doing them. We have secret objectives. We use secret methods to achieve secret objectives that we never talk about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what Munzenberg did. Munzenberg was a conspiracy. He ran a massive multi-billion-dollar conspiracy against the United States, made up of many other co-conspirators, many of them who were witting, that is, who knew what was happening. Many others, or the vast majority, were unwitting. The people who joined his front organizations, who he called innocents, they didn't know what they were getting involved in, but that doesn't matter. They were still spread the message and were much more powerful than the witting ones like Otto Katz.
So if we take it back just a minute, when did he hook up with the KGB and when did they say, hey, let's go to the U.S. and find some useful idiots to do the bidding of communism?
Willie Munzenberg was the same generation as Vladimir Lenin. Vladimir Lenin was exiled from Russia a couple of times, but just before the Russian Revolution, he was exiled to Switzerland. I'm pretty sure he was in Geneva. Willie Munzenberg was exiled from Germany and was in the same circle as Lenin, the same Marxist communist circles as Lenin. He was a Lenin's buddy. Lenin, the Germans allowed the Russian communists, Lenin and his circle of advisors, to travel from Switzerland to Russia. They put them in a train in Switzerland and they sealed it and would not let them get out as it passed through Germany. And they looked at them sort of like they were infected. They didn't want Germany to be infected, but they wanted Russia to be infected. The Germans facilitated Lenin and the communists to go back into Russia. And in fact, that's why that was a German covert influence operation that brought an end into World War I. That was their goal. They wanted to foment the rebellion against the Tsar's forces.
Why?
So it would weaken Russia. Germany was at war with Russia.
Sure, yeah. Hitler was very much against communism. He was right, though, when he said that communism was the threat that was going to destroy Western civilization. So, of course, there was a lot of disinfo injected into society that was very anti-Hitler. I'm sure you've looked into some World War II theories.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other story. But the same kind of operations were run in World War II. And I'm talking about World War I now. It was 1917.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so that's how Lenin ended up back in Russia, but the Germans helped him get there. Munzenberg accompanied Lenin to the train station to get on that train that was sealed up and said, I believe they went to Finland before they went to Russia.
Sweden, actually.
Munzenberg was not allowed. The Germans wouldn't let him on the train because he was German, and he wouldn't get on either because he knew that he was wanted in Germany. But the point is that he was in Lenin's inner circle. So he stayed in Switzerland. Lenin went back, fomented the rebellion, started the revolution, and then set up they're called the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks set up the communist government there. Munchenberg never went back, never went and lived in Moscow or lived in Russia, but he was in constant covert communication with them and overt. He became an overt member of the Comintern, of the Communist International. He was in charge of what today we would call PR or communications. But what it was overt propaganda. He put out several, his cover job in the Comintern was, he ran their film company, and he put out several communist magazines, Russian Life and things like that. That was his job for public consumption. But his covert job was running these covert influence operations. And although I only focus on the influence operations against the United States, he was also running them against all of the free world, the Western Europe, Eastern Europe, all of Europe, Australia, China, anywhere that there was a free people, Munchenberg had covert influence operations running there. I just focus on the United States. So that was, Munchenberg was there at the beginning of the USSR. He was tied in at the highest level. He was a friend of Lenin. He knew all of the operators, and there's no good documentary evidence of exactly what he did, because the Russians will not release it. The KGB has opened up its archives, but that was a very controlled opening of the archives. They only let Westerners see what they wanted them to see. They have kept hidden the vast majority of their archives, including the whole, there was a section in the Comintern that is pretty clear ran the covert operations. That section has not been opened at all. So the point is that Munchenberg was working within the Comintern at the highest levels, and he was working with all of the security and intelligence operators in the early, from the beginning, the first days of the USSR, until he died during World War II.
How deeply do you think KGB agents infiltrated the U.S. government and possibly even the CIA later?
Well, you know, if you go back to starting with Munchenberg, he was able to. In Munchenberg's time, he had a couple of contemporaries, and this is one of the biggest contributions to intelligence history that I made in my research was I identified one agent, one operator by the name of Alexander Gumberg. Gumberg was very much like Munchenberg, but he started out at a much lower level. He was a Russian, native-born Russian immigrant to the United States when he was about 10 or 11. When the revolution came, 1917, Gumberg was working for a Menshevik newspaper, a communist socialist newspaper in New York City. Trotsky, Leon Trotsky, who was another one of the original group of leaders of the Bolshevik Revolution, visited New York and worked at that newspaper with Gumberg. When Trotsky went back in the summer of 1917, went back to Russia he was called back by Lenin to take part in the planning. Gumberg took a train from New York across Canada, a boat to Vladivostok, and then the train across Siberia to St. Petersburg. Gumberg to take part in the revolution with Trotsky and the others. He immediately became part of the inner circle of the Bolsheviks. he was from the beginning. Gumbert, when Americans met him, they thought he was American because he had grown up in the United States. He spoke unaccented English. He also spoke perfect Russian. What I discovered is that Gumbert recruited and ran all of the official American representatives in St. Petersburg during the revolution. I go into it in not great detail in Willing Accomplices, but I do talk about it. And in fact, I'm working on a book specifically on Gumbert right now because it's fascinating. But it turned out that the official American embassy was shut out of communications with the Bolsheviks as they seized power. The president, Woodrow Wilson, and the State Department communicated with the Bolsheviks through a representative of the Red Cross by the name of Raymond Robbins. Gumbert recruited Robbins and was Robbins called him his translator, but he was actually his handler. He was the Russian intelligence handler for Robbins. He facilitated meetings with Lenin and other high-level Bolsheviks for Robbins and controlled the image and what Robbins thought that he knew. Gumbert's role there became the template for how communists controlled American and European and Westerners' views of their country. They always had a handler translator, and that handler translator is always an espionage intelligence officer. So Gumbert in that period of the revolution ran and handled Robbins, who was America's highest representative at the time, and who went on the rest of his life. He maintained a friendship with Gumbert and demonstrated for the United States to he supported the Soviet Union for the rest of his life. He wanted the United States to recognize the Soviet Union diplomatically, which we didn't do for about 10 or 15 years afterwards. So Gumbert not only ran Robbins, but he ran Senator Borah from Idaho. The whole family of La Follette's, who were early progressive movement leaders from Wisconsin, from Indiana, any high-level person who came to St. Petersburg and then Moscow in the first year of the revolution, Gumbert was their guide translator, and he recruited them. Mm. He came back to the United States with Robbins when Robbins came back in late 1918, in the spring, summer of 1918, and he ended up working on Wall Street. And through the entire, first he was the representative of the cover organization for the Soviets called AMTORG, which the KGB used until it was dissolved in the 50s as a cover organization. So the point is that from the first days of the Soviet Union, the KGB and its predecessors, the Cheka, had infiltrated our government at the highest levels and controlled the message that the American public and the American officials received about the Soviet Union. So that was a long answer to your question, but there's a lot more there too. I'm summarizing, but the bottom line is they ate our lunch from the very beginning. We were these innocents abroad. Raymond Robbins was a pitiful, emotional wreck. He was a social worker that made good political connections. And didn't know anything about Russia, didn't know anything about foreigners when he ended up with the Red Cross in in St. Petersburg. They put up against him this ultra-sophisticated man of the world, Alexander Gumbert, who just totally manipulated him and every other American that he came into contact with. So they've been doing that from the very beginning, and they continued. Their worst enemy was themselves. When Stalin took power, he mistrusted anybody who had contact with foreigners, and especially Americans. And he ended up calling back his KGB staff who were in the United States and murdering them all.
Great. Nice guy.
He took all of, and in fact, he hunted down. That's how Muenzenberg died. Muenzenberg finally quit. He defected, but the KGB stayed after him. He defected as in he stopped working for them, but he never was debriefed, or no Western intelligence agency was ever able to get from him a version of what he did. He was still a true believer, but he disliked what Stalin was doing. He was finally hunted down as the Nazis invaded France in 40 or 41. The KGB caught up with him, and he was found. His body was found hanging from a tree by a wire. He had been in an internment camp when he escaped, and it looks like he was murdered by the KGB.
Now, if we switch gears a little bit and look at Hollywood today, you just have to watch one TV or movie to know that it's crawling with communists. I work there. I've had a lot of experiences. So tell us about the Jewess by the name of Dorothy Parker and what her role was.
Well, Dorothy Parker was, like I mentioned earlier, the Sacco and Vanzetti. That was Muenzenberg's first cover operation in New York. At the time, Parker was a writer in New York City, and she joined the Sacco and Vanzetti front organization. She ended up being a member of dozens, if not scores, of Muenzenberg front organizations. And it's my professional opinion is that she was recruited, and she knew what she was doing. She's the case study that I use for the penetration of Hollywood. Muenzenberg and Otto Katz set up scores of front organizations, of anti-normal American front organizations in Hollywood. Many European refugees showed up in Hollywood, and they were instrumental in all of these organizations. And all of them were exactly what we think of as PC today. They were based on the idea that America is a racist, sexist, homophobic, foreigner-hating, etc. Every single one of them was anti-fascist or women's rights or supporting Ethiopians or something. But the message was normal America is bad. Dorothy Parker was active, vocal, public, outspoken, very much sort of like Michael Moore is today. She pushed, we didn't call it political correctness back then, but it was, in effect, she was pushing the PC progressive line that America is really, really bad. She's a perfect example. And I uncovered her in my research, and she deserves a book of her own for all of her Muenzenberg activities. But she is just, I just use these case studies as just examples. She's just one of dozens, hundreds, thousands of willing accomplices in Hollywood and education, academia, and the media who were exposed to and willingly imbibed this anti-normal American message and created political correctness. And Dorothy Parker is revered to this day by politically correct progressives, and many feminists revere her. Somehow they see her as some sort of symbol, but in effect, what she is a normal America hater.
Oh yeah,
and you know, and interesting sort of aside about, you know, when I got into the research looking at these people, they're all really pitiful, wretched losers. Dorothy Parker was a bitter, hateful, drunk. She was responsible for, in some way, just the death of virtually every man who ever became involved with her.
Interesting.
From her father to a couple of husbands to boyfriends. She was bad news in every way. And it's her life story is just, it's quite disgusting when you look at it with sort of an unbiased eye.
And it's also like Karl Marx. He lived in dirt. He was a slob, and his children were starving.
It boils down to the PC progressives. It's all about they love humanity, but they hate humans.
Yeah.
and that's exactly, Dorothy Parker is a great example of that. So yes, she was at the forefront of the penetration of Hollywood, and it continued. The Munzenberg payload and message was planted at that time in the 20s in Hollywood, and it took root and grew and spread until today. It is politically correct. Progressivism is the religion of Hollywood. If you do not toe the line, the PC progressive line, you will be destroyed. You will not have a career. You will not be able to work there. Every movie has to look at all of the entertainment, whether it's movies or television. It all
racist,
has to have
homophobic, anti-Semitic,
imperialist, capitalist hellhole, and it must be changed. Anything to do with business, businessmen have to be idiots. If it's white people, they have to be racist. Or the flip side is the anti. Because what political correctness is about being anti. It's anti-normal America, which if you look at, who created, who I call normal Americans are white Anglo-Saxon Protestant straight males.
Mm-hmm.
That's who created America and people who loved them. The women were there. Women were extremely important in the creation of America, but it was the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males. That's normal America.
Yep.
PC progressivism must hate every piece of what a normal American is. White, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, or Christian.
Straight white male. You get it the worst.
Straight white male, yes. Yeah, straight white males. That's right. Munzenberg could have said that, but Munzenberg had too much class and savvy. He never said it right out, but it was the message that he inserted, and it's what became political correctness. So, and the same thing, if you look at academia, which is higher education, colleges and universities, that too is the religion. PC progressivism is the religion. Hate America. It's nothing about, like I started off defining what is PC. It's not about being sensitive. It's not about not hurting people's feelings. It is about destroying and denigrating normal America. Mm-hmm. It is the religion in academia. It is that given in education, which is kindergarten to 12th grade, you cannot celebrate normal Americans. Everything has to be have an asterisk by it. If you talk about George Washington, you have to say, well, he was also a slave owner and he was bad. So instead, let's celebrate George Washington Carver, who was black and he was good.
Mm-hmm.
There's no negatives about people who are not normal Americans, who were not part of the founding fathers. Everything's good about them. So that's K to 12. And the same in the media today, is everything has to denigrate or demean normal America. And that is what politically correct progressivism is.
Oh, yeah.
It is the opponent to normal America, and it will continue to eat away the heart of this country until conservatives and normal Americans realize exactly what our opponent's belief system is and accept it, that that's what they believe. Only then can we begin to counteract it.
I wish these conservatives would start thinking with more of a conspiratorial mind, too, and not be such warmongers and trust everything they hear on mainstream media either. That's one of the problems. They're also being programmed.
Well, they too are products of this culture.
Yeah.
The cultural transmission has been controlled, but they know that it's not that the media, academia, and Hollywood are lying.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they still are constricted, especially politicians. They're constrained by PC progressivism. You can't speak out without being destroyed. I mean, look what happens to anybody who speaks out and tells the truth.
Straight white male need to grow some balls and start doing it, because that's the only thing that's going to change this, you know.
That's exactly what I say, is that, you know, you have to accept reality. And, you know, you say that we should be more conspiratorial. I don't like to use that terminology because it sounds funky, but what I say is we need to be realistic. You have to realize this is reality. The reality is the Willie Munson Bird created an operation the goal of which was to destroy American exceptionalism. It worked, and that's where we are today. Our culture does not celebrate American exceptionalism. American exceptionalism is still there, but it is denigrated and denied by politically correct progressives.
Mm-hmm.
We, normal Americans and people who believe in America, you know, you don't have to be a straight white male to believe in America. You don't have to be a Christian to believe in America and to love what it is. We have always accepted all people from all over the world who are willing to assimilate into the American dream, the American culture. We always have.
Mm-hmm.
They've come from all over the world to join us. We all need to stand up now to politically correct progressivism and say, stop. No, this America is not bad. America is the greatest country in the history of the world, and we can continue to be if we stop your destructive message of denigrating and denying our exceptionalism.
So cultural Marxists, they've initiated this immigration and multiculturalism programs in Western nations and Western nations only. So what is the link to PC progressivism and multiculturalism in your view?
Well, you know, cultural Marxism is just a terminology that people have come up with who didn't understand what was happening around them. Cultural Marxism is simply the overt expression of Munzenberg's covert influence operation. America is a racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, capitalist, imperialist hellhole. That's Munzenberg's message that he inserted covertly. That's exactly what people call cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism doesn't mean anything. It's people seeing something happening and giving a term to it that they think describes what they're seeing,
yeah.
But it's not what they're seeing. So when you say cultural Marxism, I call it PC progressivism, the results of Munzenberg's operation. It's the exact same thing. So multiculturalism is simply the denigration of American exceptionalism. It is an expression of Munzenberg's payload.
So
it's the exact same thing.
So some people say, because we have a lot of people that are no strangers to conspiracy here, and they'll say, one CIA, always CIA. So do you think people are suspicious of your motives since you're ex-CIA?
Well, why don't you go to Bing and enter Quisby purged CIA. I've been purged. John Brennan. I wrote a lot about intelligence, and I wrote for Breitbart, Front Page Mag, all of the Newsmax, all of the big conservative websites. I wrote during the early war on terror from about 2004 until for several years. And I wrote about the Obama administration and its cronies, specifically John Brennan, who is now the director of the CIA. When I had been doing contracts for the agency, and when Brennan came in, he hunted me down, and within 2 weeks, I'd been purged from the CIA.
Yeah.
So the entire federal power structure is controlled by politically correct progressives, and they are on. It's Stalinist. I mean, it's not quite. Stalin called you back when he purged you. He put a bullet in your head. Right now, that's not happening yet, but the PC progressives who are in charge of Obama's handlers and the rest of the federal government are purging those who are threats to them or who don't toe the line.
So basically, CIA and the government, they're pushing this politically correct agenda.
100%.
Yeah.
110%. That is... That politically correct progressivism is the religion of the federal government now.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires destroying normal Americans. Look at the IRS, what happened with IRS and Tea Party. Look at Benghazi, what's happening with Benghazi, where it's not clear exactly what was happening, but it's very clear that no one is speaking up and telling the truth about it. And people have, in the State Department and others, have talked about their careers being threatened. And so take it for what it's worth. But I can tell you that I'm telling the truth, and I'm working for myself.
So, yeah, what do you make of the U.S. meddling in the East and then giving so much money to the State of Israel? I mean, if we look, the Zionists are disproportionately represented in Senate, Congress, Supreme Court, foreign policy, media, education, entertainment, banking. I mean, you name it. And Karl Marx and Leon Trotsky, they were Jews. So what do you make of this?
Well, what I make of it is I greatly admire the Jewish race. They are doing exactly what we should, Americans should be doing, and that is aggressively pursuing their own interests.
Sure, yeah. Europeans should be pursuing their interests, yeah.
We should do the exact same thing.
Yep.
We should pursue our own interests and use others as we can use them. That's what the CIA is for, is to covertly manipulate others for American interests. However, it has now been perverted, and it is covertly manipulating others for politically correct progressive interests. So anyway, the point is Israel has a fantastic operation of manipulating others for their own self-interest. You know, and God bless them. they are, wow, how powerful are they? They're a small minority, and yet they work together for their own interests.
Yeah, I think us Europeans, we haven't been such collectivists, but we need to start doing so to fight back to some of this. My one issue here, though, with a lot of these Zionists is they go around to Europe and they're here and they're promoting multiculturalism and internationalism in the West, but they insist that Israel remain a racially pure nation enclave for Jews. So it's the double standard there that drives me nuts.
Well, the thing is, with any kind of PC progressivism, you can't get caught up in calling them hypocrites. Of course they're hypocrites. Everything they do is based on a lie. Everything is a lie. Mm-hmm. So it's not just any one group that is hypocritical. It is every PC progressive policy, belief, everything is a hypocritical lie. The entire belief system is based on lies and unreality.
I see, too, that these Marxists are really seeking to destroy anything that's nationalistic or sovereign. Do you think they have an agenda to bring in a global dictatorship?
Well, I don't think that they're not Marxists. There are virtually no Marxists left. There's very, very few. Anybody who is a Marxist is a total wacko. Anybody who is overtly Marxist is a total wacko.
I think so.
What we have to worry about are the ones who are anti-capitalists. Well, it boils down to sort of crony capitalism. They believe in crony capitalism.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let us get in charge, and we will dole out the business to our buddies, and we'll destroy our enemies. That's not Marxism. That's what Marxism ends up being, but they're not Marxists. They're PC progressives. They hate the American capitalist system unless they got their fingers in the pie, mm-hmm. and then they love it.
They keep calling it free market, though, which is not what this is.
Well, I mean, the ones who PC progressives don't call it free market. They'll talk about, well, we need to do things that are fair and that are for everyone. But no, seeing crony capitalism is a perversion of the free market, and that's where we're at under this regime.
I know you're an expert also in Islamic extremism. So what do you make of that? Is it a real threat? And why is Europe why are the gates just being open to Muslim colonization?
Well, Europe is very different from the United States. Europe, the places where they now have problems with Islamic extremism and Islamic minorities, Muslim minorities, those were places that had colonies, that had historically had colonies, Muslim colonies. France owned all of North Africa. Britain had Muslim colonies in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh. That's where their problems are coming.
Sweden never had colonies, but they're getting hit the hardest up there. I don't know if you've been following or watching any news.
Sweden?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They probably have the highest Muslim population per capita in Sweden right now. The little country Sweden.
I know that they have some there, but I don't think it's that large. I think that
I live there also. I go part time, and it's really bad.
It's very vocal. What their problem is, they have totally bought into PC progressivism, that is the denigration of traditional culture. PC progressivism can go to any Western European culture. That normal Swedish is now denigrated and put down. But so get back to your original question: is how does this tie into Muslims and Islamic extremism in Western countries?
Mm-hmm.
And the way I describe it is, it is sort of like an opportunistic infection. If your body's immune system is destroyed, then your body becomes subject to any infection that passes through. A nation's immune system is its culture. Every nation believes that they are unique, that they are strong, and that they have something that's worth celebrating and passing down to the next generation. If that immune system is destroyed, if the national identity is denigrated, is put down, is if the culture passes on the message that we're all a bunch of racist haters, then your immune system is destroyed. And now it is very easy for different infections to take root in that in the destroyed immune system. And that's what's happening with Islamic extremism in the West, is that we've lost our veneration, our appreciation, our
ancient ways, our ancient European culture.
Exactly. We've lost that. So that's the immune system. The immune system is gone, so now it can be infected by anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening. You know, you add to that the history of colonization and bringing your ex-colonists back. Or in Germany, it was migrant workers, the Turks, that kind of thing. That's what's happening.
It's just a shame, though, because they go there and then they just sit on welfare their whole life.
Yep. But the United States, our problem is not that. Our problem is we're seeing it right now at the Mexican border.
Oh, yeah.
And that invasion is just as much a result of our destroyed immune system as Islamic extremism in Sweden or France. We just have a different opportunistic infection.
Yeah, it's horrible. I've been traveling around some of those southern border states, and I gasp. It's turning into a third world country.
That's right.
I thought the whole point of this country was that our ancestors worked to be above that. They worked their asses off to give us what we have today, and now we're just handing it all away.
That's what PC progressivism is about. Destroy normal America. They haven't quite thought it through yet.
that's what I think. So once it's destroyed, then what? What are they going to have? They're just going to be these overlords?
There is no plan. There is no plan. The only plan, all they believe in is America sucks. Normal America sucks. And then we will create utopia. They're not utopians. They're haters. They're anti. The PC progressives are anti. They're against. They're not for anything. That's why people who call them communists or Marxists or socialists totally misunderstand them. And that's why we get our lunch eaten. We are conservatives and normal Americans who don't understand this belief system are just destroyed when we deal with them.
Yeah. We're about building up, not tearing down.
That's right. They're all about destroying, and then, you know, they're short term. They want to feast on the crumbs that fall from the table when the cake is crushed. But they don't think about, well, what about tomorrow? You know, how are we going to put bread on the table tomorrow? They don't care. It's not part of their belief system. It's just those hating white males must be destroyed.
Couple more questions for you before we round up. Well, as someone who specialized in covert ops and counterintelligence, have you thought about tactics to reclaim our Western countries?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I would, you know, if somebody would come to me with $10 million tomorrow, I could start an operation immediately that would start using these exact same tactics.
Well, that's what amazes me, because on the right side, conservatives, there's a lot of money out there. So why isn't it being channeled into the war here, into the war that's going on in our country?
That's why I wrote Willing Accomplices. Is the reason that it's not is because we conservatives and normal Americans do not understand what the war is. We refuse to open our eyes and deal with reality.
Yeah.
That's why. If normal Americans would grasp the message of Willing Accomplices and realize who our opponents are and what their belief system is, then they would be ready to do whatever needs to be done to counteract them. But they're not. People cannot stand. Normal Americans are the whole idea of a secret operation is just anathema to them.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stand to think about it. They want to think that, well, Yeah, well, you look at the last elections when Obama ran against Romney and McCain. What did Romney and McCain say about Obama? Well, we know he loves the country and he'll do a good job and we'll support him. What?
He's a neocon, you know, by the way.
All of them are.
Yeah.
All of them are, you know. So what you got is that is our leadership. That is a conservative leadership. If that's what they're saying, then, you know, how can we do anything against they fundamentally misunderstand who our opponents are and what their belief system is. So until they do, there's nothing that can be done. When they do, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. I'm ready. Give me a call.
It's good to know. So how do you think the progressives are going to respond once their sinister plans are known to more conservatives and Americans?
The way they always do, and it's the name of my publishing company, it's Andemka, and that stands for Admit Nothing, Deny Everything, and Make Counter Accusations. That's how they respond to being exposed, and it comes from where? Willie Munsenberg. That's the way that he dealt with exposure, is you admit nothing, you deny everything, and you make counter accusations. It's actually the signature of a PC progressive. Anytime they're exposed, they always do. Andemka. So that's how they will always respond whenever they're exposed. Every time.
I see a lot of conservatives and people on the right. They don't trust Russia. They still seem to think that Russia still has a communist agenda, but they're completely off base. It seems like America is more the Soviet-style bad guy now, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely is.
Look at how Putin is demonized and people are fearful that he wants to export communism when we already have it.
Yep, exactly. And again, that's, normal Americans cannot wrap their head around that our culture has been destroyed.
Yeah.
They still, I'm in my mid-50s. People my age, conservatives, still believe that America that we live in today is the same America that we grew up in. You know, they cannot, you know, reality is too difficult for them to grasp. They cannot wrap their head around the fact that normal, traditional America is gone and we live in a PC progressive world, country that is, it's upside down from what they thought, what they think they're living in. So they look back fondly on the Cold War days when Russia was the hated enemy, and they were, they were out to destroy us, and they did. In fact, it was the Russian communist operation that destroyed us. It just took a lot longer than they expected it to. So anyway, we could do a whole other week on just that subject.
Hey, I saw on your website you had a link. I thought, speaking of politically correct insanity, you linked to a study that said smartness is false and oppressive. Oh, and so is whiteness, by the way.
Of course it is. Straight white males who strive and study hard are haters. Clearly. That's right out of Munsenberg's mouth. It's exactly, and that's PC progressivism today.
Kent, please give out your website details and tell us all about the books you have available.
Sure, yeah. My website is Kent Clisby, KENTCLI, Z like zebra, B like boy, .com. And there you can find my profile and links to pretty much all of the articles that I've written in the last 10 years or so. That's under media. There's also links to my books, and my book, Willing Accomplices, WILLINGACCOMPLICES.com, has its own website, willingaccomplices.com. And there you can find pretty much full details from the book. If you don't have time to read it, read the website. Everything is there. You can also find a link there to get a hold of a paperback copy, Kindle, or an audio book from audible.com. Willing Accomplices is all about where did PC progressivism come from? And the second book, Obliterating Exceptionalism, is its effects today, starting with the Obama administration and looking at how the PC progressives through the Obama regime have destroyed American exceptionalism in every facet, cultural, political, foreign affairs. There's a section in Obliterating Exceptionalism for all of those. And you can find that on the website as well.
Kent, I appreciate your time today. Thanks again.
Thank you, Lana. It was great talking to you, and look forward to talking to you again.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's no denying that American culture has been destroyed, but the question remains, what are you going to do about it? Let's face it, logic, reasoning, and common sense is not going to win this politically correct culture war. Let's take Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals into play. Rule number 5, ridicule is man's most potent weapon. So the next time you get called a racist, a bigot, or an anti-Semite, or the usual predictable responses, turn it around to mock, ridicule, and scorn the traitor in your midst. Be the counterculture and love your bigotry against PC fascism. Own it. We all know who the real racists and bigots are, so start calling them out on it and learn to have a lot of fun doing it. Because these PC fascists are only getting louder and more violent, which will bring about their demise. Rule number 12. Pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Polarization is at the core of the left's strategy. According to PC progressives, if you're not a liberal, you hate blacks, Hispanics, gays, Muslims, women, the poor, the environment, etc., etc. So start polarizing the PC fascists. Why not point out that PC liberals who support affirmative action for women in the workplace do so because they think women are so weak that they can't even compete and therefore need a leg up? I'd encourage you all to read the Rules for Radicals so you know the tactics of your enemy. The fact is that this is a war that must be engaged on all fronts possible, so pick up your sword, tongue, and join the battle. Join me next week for Michael Griffith as we discuss the Northern War of Aggression, but most know it as the American Civil War. Learn what really happened. If you like what we do, you can help us out by signing up for a Red Ice membership where you'll have full access to hundreds of radio programs. RedIceMembers.com is the website, and of course our website, RedIceCreations.com, and also Radio314.com. Radio314 is on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, Stitcher, iTunes, RSS, and on the Red Ice Radio YouTube channel. I'm going to leave you with a very anti-American song, and let me tell you, one does not have to look far to find one, because that's all you get anymore. This trite song is by The Clash, and it's called I'm So Bored with the USA. By the way, I worked for Miles Copeland, who started the music management company called CIA and also started IRS Records. Miles came from a CIA family who was behind the new wave music scene and managed The Clash. And he was very anti-American.
Yankee soldier, he wanna shoot some skank. He met it in Cambodia with no camp before the bag. Yankee dollar talked to the dictators of the world. In fact, he's given orders and he can't afford to miss a word. Cause I'm so bored with the USA. I'm so bored with the USA. What can I do? Yankee detectives are always on the TV. Cause killers in America work 7 days a week. Never mind the stars and stripes, let's print the Watergate tapes. I'll salute the new wave and I hope nobody escapes. Cause I'm so bored with the USA. I'm so bored with the USA. What can I do? What can I do? We'll be right back. for the CIA. Suck on coal, Jack.